Thank you very much for inviting. People are familiar with metaphysics here, so this is not the type of talk where I will start with, you know, explaining what I mean by property, well, apart from some clarifications maybe. So I'm just going to assume that we all... Yeah. So this is a talk on phenomenal property. So I should say that I'm revising this paper at the moment for resubmission. So any helpful feedback that you give will be appreciated and will be helpful in the next draft. So the main question that I'll try to answer is this: what is an epiphenomenal property? And of course, everyone has a very short answer to this. I mean, not everyone, but you know, you'd have a very simple answer to this question. So an epiphenomenal property is a property without any causal powers. So that is the idea of an epiphenomenal property. But of course, that is not really an explanation. So you need to explain what it is for a property not to be rightly associated with some causal powers. So I will try to give an answer to that question. But of course, in order to do that, you also need to answer the next question. So what is it for a property to have some causal power? Because, you know, only after answering this question can we have an informative account of what it is for a property not to have any causal powers. And then we will get to the main argument of the paper, where I will answer this question: are higher level properties, like mental properties, like having beliefs, having desires, and so on, or properties that are invoked in special sciences, you know, are those properties epiphenomenal? So, first of all, I will argue for the following thesis, which I call the Nomic Bearer's thesis. It's not a very beautiful name, but it has somehow stuck with me, so I have to stay with it. So, I will argue that a property can be said to have some causal power insofar as it is nomologically guaranteed that anything with that property must have that power. So, you know, the reason why I have scare quotes around have is, you know, I'm going to talk a lot about, you know, why it is, in a way, sort of really odd to talk about properties as if they have powers. Or so. Anyway, so I'll say, you know, in a way, sometimes it is appropriate to attribute causal powers to properties insofar as, you know, it is nomologically guaranteed by, you know, laws of nature, that things that have those properties have those powers. And then I will use that account to explain the notion of an epiphenomenal property. And then I will argue that higher level properties in that sense are not epiphenomenal properties. So that is the plan of the paper. So I'm not going to, you know, give a definition of a property. I'm just going to clarify one thing so that, you know, we don't have a misunderstanding about what I have to say. So I take properties to be universals, at least for the sake of this talk. You know, don't ask me to give an argument for it, but we can talk about it in the Q&A. So what is important is that my properties, you know, the way I use the term property, are not particular. So they are not tropes, they are not instances or instantiations, they are not bearers, right? So they are these sort of like repeatable entities. And this is probably a controversial methodological preference, particularly in this room, but I'm going to sort of use power, causal power in this position interchangeably. Again, we can talk about my reasons for that in the Q&A, so I don't want to spend too much time on that. Just everything that I will say about, you know, causal powers and so on can be understood in a way that you sort of interpret me as talking about dispositions. So, for example, in my sense, you know, being fragile is a causal power. So we will now have a look at this sort of locution, a relatively odd and awkward sounding locution, power of a property. But it is really, you know, it is used a lot in the literature on epiphenomenal properties. So, you know, as if, you know, properties are the sort of sorts of entities that can sort of possess causal powers. So there is this debate on higher level causal powers, and particularly in metaphysics of mind, but in general in philosophy of the special sciences, the question about, you know, whether higher level properties, you know, properties that macro relatively macro objects have sort of contribute any causal powers over and above or on top of the causal powers that are contributed by physical properties. That is the debate that, you know, Jagwon Kim has written about for the last 30 or 40 years in great detail. So you might be familiar with this debate. So the idea is, according to Kim, so this, you know, if you take these higher level properties, let's stick to philosophy of mind. Like if you take these beliefs and desires as, you know, as higher level properties to be non-identical with physical properties, that is, if they are somehow not reducible to physical properties, then according to Kim, you have only two options. You know, either they are going to be epiphenomenal, that is, they won't have any causal powers, because, you know, all causal work that they are supposed to do will be carried out by physical properties that underlie them, or they will be strongly emergent. That is, they will have no causal powers, but that will mean that you have to give up the causal closure of the physical. That is, you know, the idea of the causal closure of the physical, or the principle of the causal closure of the physical, is that every physical effect has a sufficient physical cause. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the details of this argument, because I'm not going to actually engage with the premises of this argument. I'm just trying to give you the context of this issue of powers of properties and the literature on philosophy of special sciences. But anyway, that is the idea. So he thinks that, in a way, you have only three legitimate options. You have to reduce higher level properties to physical properties. That is one option. Otherwise, they will be either epiphenomenal, or they are going to imply, or their existence is going to sort of entail the failure of the causal closure of the physical. So that is the idea. And this is usually given as a dilemma for non-reductive physicalists, again, particularly in the philosophy of mind. So non-reductive physicalism is the view that, you know, physicalism is true, obviously, that's the name of the view. That is, in a way, the physical world is causally closed, the causal closure of the physical is true, but higher level properties are somehow not identical with physical properties. So that is the idea of non-reductive physicalism. So Kim's arguments are basically targeting non-reductive physicalism by saying that, well, that is not a tenable view, because if you're a physicalist, then, you know, well, it is not a tenable view if you believe in mental causation or higher level causation or macro causation. The idea is that if you're a physicalist, then the physical, you will think that the physical world will be causally closed. Therefore, you won't have any room for higher level causes over and above physical causes. But, you know, if you want to have such higher level causal powers, then you have to give up on the physical causal closure. So that is why it's a dilemma for non-reductive physicalism. And, you know, his desired conclusion from this dilemma is that, actually, if you want to sort of allow higher level properties to have causal powers, then you have to reduce them to physical properties. That is the idea. Anyway, so is this relatively clear? Okay. I mean, there are so many responses to this argument. You might be familiar with them. I'm just going to talk about one of them, because it is relevant to what I'll talk about in the second half of the paper. So there's this subset response, prominently given by Jessica Wilson and Sidney Shoemaker to this problem here. So, in a way, Kim's argument is as if, you know, you have only three options. You have to, the first option is the identity of higher level properties with physical properties. The second option is that these higher level properties are epiphenomenal, and the third option is that, you know, they have novel causal powers, therefore they are emergent. And in a way, the subset response that Wilson and Shoemaker and a few others give is that there's a fourth option, which is you might allow such higher level properties to have a proper subset of the causal powers of the physical properties that they depend on. So given that they have, after all, causal powers, they are not epiphenomenal. So given that they have, after all, different sets of causal powers relative to physical properties, they are not identical with physical properties. And given that they only have a subset of the causal powers of physical properties, they are not strongly emergent either. So there must be a fourth option. And that is the response that these people give. So I'm going to give my own argument that, you know, higher level properties in the non-reductive physicalist framework are not epiphenomenal. So I'm not going to appeal to the subset strategy. I'm just trying to sort of motivate the idea that it is not really nonsensical to talk about, you know, properties or sort of powers of properties, particularly in this, if you are in this literature. So because we have seen claims like epiphenomenal properties are problematic for not having causal powers. We saw that strongly emergent properties are distinctive because they have novel causal powers. And then, according to Wilson and Shoemaker, physically acceptable higher-level properties are, you know, claimed to have a proper subset of the causal powers of their physical base properties, and so on and so forth. So you will see all these claims in the literature. So what is common is this, I think, when people talk about these issues in these terms. A presupposition that a property is the sort of entity that may have causal powers. There is an assumption that it's okay to say that, you know, properties may or may not have causal powers. But I think it's a legitimate question here. So do properties have causal powers? Given that, you know, I take properties to be, if you remember, I said, you know, I take properties to be universals, or at least, you know, even if there are no universals, they are not, you know, my properties are not particular, so they will be maybe sets of particulars, but, you know, when you have that understanding of properties, then this question is a very legitimate question. So do properties have causal powers? And what is it for a property to have a causal power, if the answer is yes? And here's, you know, you might agree with this claim here. So properties, strictly speaking, don't have causal powers. So this is where I start to sound as if I'm sort of, you know, contradicting myself, but I'm going to clarify, you know, because I have been talking about properties and their causal powers, and I'm now saying that properties don't have causal powers. So, but my point is that, strictly speaking, this is true. So they don't have causal powers. And the reason is this. So if properties are universals, then given that universals are abstract entities, then properties don't have causal powers, because abstract entities don't have causal powers. And even if you don't like universals, so if properties are not universals, then you would probably think that properties are identical with sets of particulars. But sets themselves, and quasets or pure sets, are abstract entities too. Despite having concrete members, as sets they are abstract entities too. So as properties, then they would still lack causal powers. And that is my reason for thinking that properties don't have causal powers. And I don't think that this is a very controversial claim. So, and then the question is, are then all properties epiphenomenal? And that is definitely not something that I want to accept. Because then the question of epiphenomenal properties in the philosophy of spatial sciences and metaphysics of mind would be very uninteresting, right? So if you say, well, you know, the higher level properties are epiphenomenal because all properties are epiphenomenal, that would be very uninteresting as a philosophical discovery. So that is why, you know, I think something must have gone wrong in this reasoning so far. And my diagnosis is this. So the claim that properties don't have causal powers should be weakened to allow for a real versus derivative distinction, or a literal versus non-literal distinction regarding the use of the word have here. And the claim that I want to propose is this. So properties don't really have causal powers, but there's a derivative sense in which they can be said to have causal powers. And I'll try to, now we have some pictures, so I will try to motivate this idea by asking you to look at a couple of sentences or statements about properties, which are also on the handout. The first one is red. So the property of being red. So I always use italics for properties, both in the handout and in the slide. Just, you know, the property of being red has the causal power to generate reddish visual experiences. in normal perseverance under normal circumstances and so on. I'm not going to qualify that way every time I talk about this particular power. So this is our first statement. The second one is the property of being green has the causal power to generate reddish visual experiences. So these are the two statements that I want you to sort of think about. So if what I said is right about properties lacking causal powers, both of these statements should be strictly speaking false, because properties don't have causal power. So neither the property of being red nor the property of being green should have any causal powers if what I said is right. But I hope you would agree with me that there is a sense in which the second statement is more awkward than the first one here. That is, there is a sense in which the first one is acceptable and the second one is not. And I think, sort of, to me this is relatively obvious, but it might not be, it might be a controversial claim here. So I think the reason is this. So there's some relation, let's call this relation R, such that R holds between the property of being red and the things that really have the causal power to look red or generate reddish visual experiences, whatever. And this relation R doesn't hold between the property of being green and the concrete particles that really have the causal power to generate reddish visual experiences. And arguably that relation is the bearing relation. That is, you know, the relation between concrete particles and properties. So if you think about the first statement, RR, the one which links being green to the power to look, sorry, being red to power to look red, then being the property of being red doesn't really have this power to generate reddish visual experiences, but the red particles, red concrete particles like strawberries and tomatoes and so on, really have this causal power. So because of that, then the property derivatively has that causal power. And then regarding GR, neither the property of being green nor the bearers of that property, namely green concrete particles, have that power. So that is why the property of being green doesn't have that power even in a derivative sense. So that is the idea. And then I think this basically claim here is motivated by these examples. So properties don't really have causal powers, their bearers do. So in a derivative sense, we can say that a property F has a causal power, insofar as what we mean is that its bearers have that causal power. So I'm going to call this the bearer's thesis. So the idea is that you have to look at the bearers of a property and you have to identify its causal powers. I don't know how we do that, but just very sort of figuratively or theoretically speaking. So, and then you can actually identify the causal powers of a property. But then the question is, which bearers are we going to look at? Because, bearers, it's a very generic sounding claim that I made there. So one thing you might want to do, which I also have it in the handout here, you might want to appeal to a grounding or in virtue of relation, whereby you might say, well, the property of being red has the causal power to look red or generate reddish visual experiences, because the bearers of this property, namely red objects, have the power to look red in virtue of having that property, having the property of being red. So more generally, you might want to say a property F has a causal power C if and only if all bearers of F that have C in virtue of having F. So that is the idea. And I think many people will find, I don't know here, but so many people might find this plausible. I'm not really sure if this is true. So there are a couple of limitations here. The first limitation is not about truth, really. The first limitation is that this is not really a very sort of explanatory claim here. So all we are saying here is that there is some explanatory relationship between the powers of a bearer and the properties of a bearer, such that, you know, that relationship is explained. It is not really, you know, giving us a very sort of satisfactory explanation, but, you know, this has nothing to do with the truth of this claim. So that's just this dissatisfaction that I have with this proposal. My more serious problem here with the grounding bearer's thesis is the following. So I think there's a presupposition here that, you know, objects have their powers in virtue of their properties. And it might be fine. I think it is, you know, it is something that many people, especially if they are not really interested in metaphysics of powers and metaphysics of properties, they might just say that, well, you know, I have my powers, I have my capabilities, I can do things because I have these certain properties and so on. But I think that is a controversial claim when you think about it metaphysically, because I think it presupposes that powers are less fundamental than properties. I'm not saying, you know, they are not. It's just the idea here is that there's a presupposition here, and I'm trying to find a more neutral way of explaining the relationship between properties and powers, which doesn't really appeal to that sort of direction of fundamentality there. So, for example, you might think that powers are more fundamental than properties. So you might think that, you know, properties are clusters of causal powers, for example. So that they are in a way sort of constituted by causal powers. In that sense, then objects will have their properties. If you buy into that view, objects will have their properties in virtue of their powers. So that is why, you know, this grounding bearer's thesis sort of is arguably incompatible with that option, or even with the other option, which is that you might say that properties are powers. Given that, you know, I mean, if you think that this in virtue of relation is an irreflexive relation, then you will have some similar problems there too. So these are the reasons why I think the grounding bearer's thesis is not going to work for my purposes. Again, I should just maybe restate. My purpose here is to try to find a relatively neutral way of explaining this relationship between properties and causal powers in such a way that we can answer Kim's challenge that higher level properties must be epiphenomenal. So then you might think, well, in virtue of the locution of in virtue of led to that problem, so maybe you should just get rid of that and then just go extensional, just go to the extension of the property and say, well, you know, the property of being red has the causal power to look red because all red objects have that power. So you might call this the extensional bearer's thesis. So a property F has a causal power C if and only if all bearers of F have C. I don't want to talk a lot of, you know, I don't want to go into details about this one. It's just I'll give you one problem with this one, and then you can generate lots of other similar counterexamples. It's just the problem here is the relation is, I think, too contingent. So think of this scenario where somehow I destroy all red objects in this world, or discolor them, or whatever, I paint them over, except one red object, namely a fire extinguisher. And let's assume, for the sake of example, that this red object doesn't have any red proper parts. So, I mean, in that sense, extensional bearer's thesis implies that the property of being red has the causal power to put out fire, which is just, you know, doesn't sound right. Because, you know, when a fire extinguisher puts out fire, it has nothing to do with its color. I mean, assuming normal situations, I suppose. Okay, so this is the reason why I think the extensional bearer's thesis needs to be modified. And then you might say, well, then, of course, if contingency is the problem, then just add a model. So make it model. So you might say, well, the property of being red has the causal power to look red because it is a matter of necessity that bearers of being red have that causal power. So, you know, if you remember the contract, the example that we just talked about, well, the property of being red doesn't have the causal power to put out fire because, you know, it is just not necessarily the case that anything that is red has that power. So you could have a highly flammable red blanket, right? It wouldn't have that causal power. So let's call this the model bearer's thesis. A property F has a causal power C if and only if necessarily all bearers of F have C. I think this is, you know, this is really sort of, it's very close to truth. Just one limitation here is very similar to the one that the grounding bears thesis had. It's just, it restricts your, again, like supposedly general framework to a particular, or a set of maybe particular views about sort of nature of properties and arguable nature of laws of nature. So I think there is this sort of presupposition that, you know, properties must be dispositional somehow to make sense of that necessity claim. And arguably laws of nature, if you're a realist about laws of nature, then they should also be arguably necessary relations between maybe properties, or at least they should be necessary if model bears this is true in a way, I think. So I think such views are fine. I don't have arguments against them. It's just that, again, like I'm trying to find a more or less neutral way of explaining the notion of an epiphenomenal property. So I don't want my sort of framework to be committed to a particular view about the sort of model status of, for example, laws of nature. So obviously then, you know, the next step would be just to make this claim, or make it maybe sort of, or relativize it, so that it can accommodate those views and also other views too. So my suggestion is that the property of being red has the causal power to look red, because every bear of being red in every nomologically possible world has the causal power to look red. So the idea is that I'm sort of relativizing the necessity claim to nomological necessity. So necessity as far as the actual laws of nature are concerned. So the name, which I'm not really happy with, but I'm stuck with it now, is the nomic bearer's thesis. A property F has a causal power C if and only if, as a matter of nomological necessity, anything that has F must have C. That is, you know, power of a property is a power whose possession is nomologically guaranteed by the instantiation of that property. So that is the idea. And one thing in relation to my reason to not accept the model bearer's thesis earlier. So this way of explaining the relationship between properties and causal powers is actually compatible with both necessitarian and contingentist views about laws of nature. So you might think that laws of nature are necessary, metaphysically necessary. Then arguably, well, I think pretty much conclusively, actually. So you would think that nomological necessity and metaphysical necessity are the same type of necessity, because if laws of nature are metaphysically necessary, then nomological doesn't add anything there, it's just necessity. So, well, in that sense, if you are necessitarian about laws of nature, nothing in this thesis is really problematic there, at least, you know, as far as the necessitarianism about laws of nature is concerned. It's just, you know, nomological will be maybe redundant here. And in a way, if you think that laws of nature are necessary, then in a way, you will think that the model bearer's thesis and the nomic bearer's thesis are actually equivalent. So, you know, if you have reasons to accept the model bearer's thesis, then you should also have reasons to accept the nomic bearer's thesis. But if you think that laws of nature are contingent, you can't do that. So you can't accept the model bearer's thesis. So that is why this is a more sort of accommodating type of view. The other thing is, the nomic bearer's thesis is, I think, compatible, strictly speaking, compatible with both anti-realism about laws of nature and also maybe Humean views about laws of nature too, because it doesn't really tell you anything about, you know, what a law of nature is doing there. Maybe, just maybe, there are no laws of nature and just, maybe nomological necessities are some very strong regularities or something like that. Strictly speaking, the nomic bearer's thesis is compatible with that idea. Although, as you will see, if I have time, a realist view about laws of nature is going to be helpful in first responding to an objection to the nomic bearer's thesis and also arguing for the conclusion that I'll be trying to motivate in the last part of the talk. So I'm going to actually, you know, be realist about laws of nature. But strictly speaking, the nomic parenthesis doesn't imply realism about laws of nature. Okay, so just a bit of signposting. So the question was, what is the relationship between properties and causal powers in the sense that, you know, when we talk about properties having causal powers, what do we mean? I am going to, from now on, accept that that relationship should be understood in this way. So a property can be said to be, or you know, a property can be associated with a causal power correctly, insofar as there's a nomological necessity which links having that property with having, or to having that causal power. Now, just want to discuss this objection right now, because, you know, I have inductive evidence that you will raise this objection. So every time I talked about this, people come up with this. But I don't want to sort of preempt your objections. I just want to flag that I am aware of this issue, and I think I have reasons to actually not worry about it. But you might push further, so let's see what happens. So the objection to nomic bearer's thesis is this. So the nomic bearer's thesis implies that nomologically coextensional properties, that is, properties that are had by the same entities in all nomologically possible worlds, let's say, must have the same causal profile. So a really bad example would be having a kidney and having a heart. Suppose that they are nomologically coextensional, and they are not, but suppose they are. So is it, you know, are we going to attribute the same causal profiles to those properties? Arguably not, and that is a counterintuitive result for NBT. Let me just here just state that I'm generally dissatisfied with counterexamples which are supposed to make this point, because I think we tend to underestimate the strength of the relation of nomological coextension when we give examples of that sort, or sometimes overestimate and actually talk about the same property under different descriptions. So it's a really sort of fine balance. There's a really fine sort of you know, balance there to find a really good example of nomological coextension. And I'm just going to assume incorrectly here that this is an example. Actually, this was suggested to me by someone, so yeah, it's not really my own example, but as far as I know, it's not true. So the idea is that thermal conductivity and electrical conductivity are coextensional as a matter of a law of nature. And as far, I mean, I'm not an expert on any of this stuff, but as far as I know, they are not. So sometimes they people mention this Wiedemann-Franz law, which apparently says that in some metals there is sort of parameters are proportional. So that doesn't mean that, you know, those properties are coextensional, obviously. But assume that they are, just for the sake of making this objection to my view. So let's say that, you know, as a matter of law of nature, something has thermal conductivity if and only if it has electrical conductivity. Then, you know, it looks like, suppose that when we have a metal, piece of metal, which conducts electricity, its power to conduct electricity is manifested, you know, both in virtue of its so thermal conductivity and its sort of electrical conductivity according to this objection. And then, you know, it's a counterintuitive result, because, you know, the power to conduct electricity is not a causal power of thermal conductivity. So that is the objection to my nomic bearer's thesis. And I say, well, look, so if let's assume that that example was accurate, and arguably it is not, but let's assume it is. So assume that as a matter of nomological necessity, all bearers of thermal conductivity have that causal power to conduct electricity. And then I ask, so what is it for a statement S to be true as a matter of nomological necessity? Given my sort of realist stance on laws of nature, I think it just means that either S would be a statement of a law of nature or a consequence of a law of nature. Well, then if it is either a law of nature or a consequence of a law of nature that all bearers of thermal conductivity have the causal power to conduct electricity, then just the objection doesn't seem to be challenging enough, because if that relation is really underwritten by laws of nature, but then it might be fine to say that, oh, that causal power is a causal power of that property. I think the challenge here is that we don't really have a really good example, and that is why, you know, I raised this here, because maybe you have better counterexamples that I, you know, I will think about. But yeah, so that is the idea. So in a way, sort of, I'm not really worried about nomological coextension properties. In fact, if that implication is right, that is, you know, my view implies that nomological coextensional properties have the same causal powers, well, then I'll be happy to say maybe that actually shows that, at least in my framework, that properties are not individuated by their causal powers. At least they're not nomologically individuated by their causal powers. And then some people will find that counterintuitive for other reasons. Let's move on. Maybe we can talk about this issue. That is, how much time do I have?
Well, we have until 1 o'clock, including questions.
Okay,
it's up to you how you want
okay.
to divide it.
Maybe another 20 minutes. If
yeah,
that
sounds good.
Okay. Okay. So again, a bit of signposting. So I'm not going to be worried, at least for the sake of this talk, so far about this sort of objection. I'm going to take NBT, the nomic Beres thesis, to be true. Now we get to the main section. Or application, anyway, of this sort of idea. So, epiphenomenal properties. So, now, thanks to the nomic Beres thesis, we have the conditions whereby a property can be said to have a causal power. It just has to be the case that, as a matter of nomological necessity, all bearers of that property must have that power. Now, we are going to use it to explain the notion of an epiphenomenal property. Sorry. And this is what we get. So, a property F is epiphenomenal if and only if there is no causal power C such that, as a matter of nomological necessity, all bearers of F have C. So I'm going to pause here for a while, because it's actually different, relatively sort of like non-traditional way of understanding of epiphenomenal properties. So I just want to be clear. So the idea here is that if it is nomologically possible for two entities, two objects, to have a particular, to share the same property and yet fail to share any causal powers, then according to EP here, that property will be epiphenomenal. Because the idea is, well, if I am right about MBTM, that's the condition claim, so I can make it. If I am right about the nomic Beres thesis, then that, you know, properties have their sort of individual powers because they nomologically necessitate them. Well, a property will fail to have any causal power if there is no, you know, individual causal power whose possession is nomologically guaranteed by that property. So that is the idea. The reason I'm pausing here is just to you know, emphasize that there is some sort of like departure from how we normally tend to think about epiphenomenal properties. Because we say, oh, epiphenomenal properties are properties that don't contribute any causal powers. Maybe that's what we say. Well, in a way, EP sort of allows for that. I mean, allows for epiphenomenal properties to contribute causal powers. Just there wouldn't be any systematic way of like tying those causal powers, according to my understanding. Anyway, so we can talk about this in more detail, like in what way it is different later. So I just want to now use that understanding of epiphenomenal properties to show that actually higher level properties are not epiphenomenal. So Kim's challenge was, if you are a non-reductive physicalist, if you think that higher level properties are not identical with physical properties, they must be epiphenomenal. And I want to say they don't have to be epiphenomenal. And here is again where I'm going to appeal to laws of nature. So, are you familiar with this idea that Ned Block gives, the Disney principle? So that he says, well, it's a very sort of like playful rhetoric. In Walt Disney movies, teacups think and talk, but in the real world, anything that can do those things needs more structure than a teacup. I mean, that's a very plausible claim. You don't really need an argument for that, right? So it's just, you know, just being a teacup or having the shape of a teacup is not sufficient for, you know, being a thinker or a talker. And then he sort of says, well, we might call this the listening principle. And he says, the principle is stated as such. So, laws of nature impose constraints on ways of making something that satisfies a certain description. So, laws of nature impose constraints on how you can satisfy the description of being a thinker. So, not, you need more than just the structure of a teacup. So, there may be many ways of making such a thing, and it's actually important. So, he's happy to allow for multiple realizability. That is, you know, there might be lots of different ways of realizing a given higher level description, but not just any old structure will do. So there will be some constraints. And I think this is a very plausible claim. So I just don't think that we need to sort of worry about whether it is. I just a very, very plausible claim. Of course, in Socrates you are realist about laws of nature. If you want to give laws of nature some role in your metaphysics, and of course they are going to impose constraints on how you can do a thing. So I think it illuminates a very plausible claim, the Disney principle. So it is just not the case that for any properties f and g, there is a nomologically possible world, w, such that in w, f realizes g. I mean, it sounds a little bit maybe mouthful, but the idea is that, well, you can't just randomly choose two properties and go to a nomologically possible world, or find a nomologically possible world where there is an explanatory dependence relation between those properties. That is the idea. And I think this Disney principle illuminates that idea. Then questions, how should we understand such constraints that laws of nature impose on the instantiation of higher level properties? Well, first of all, I think it's probably almost analytically true that with constraints you get similarity. So if there are constraints on how to do something, things that do that thing will resemble each other to some extent. So constraints that laws of nature impose bring together similarities of how to realize a property. Of course, there might be lots of different ways of realizing a higher level property, but those realizers must resemble each other at least to some extent. And I think it's just very plausible that such similarities is going to be reflected on the causal powers of such properties. I mean, there are different reasons to think that is true. One of them would be to say, well, laws of nature operate via causal powers, and of course, because of that, you know, the constraint they impose are be basically constraints on what sorts of causal relations those properties may enter into. The other one is that, you know, just I can't think of any other way of thinking about how two properties might be similar to each other apart from the causal powers that they might bestow on objects. So there might be, but just I can't think of any. So I think because of those two reasons, I think that for all properties f and g, there is some causal power c such that if f is a nomologically possible realizer of g, then f has c. So again, it sounds a little bit mouthful, but the idea is that, well, different nomologically possible realizers of a given higher-level property must share some causal powers. So they might have lots of different causal powers, but there must be some causal power that those properties share. So that is going to be called Rs in the argument that we will see now. So this is basically the main argument. So we have everything now for the main argument. All the substantial premises that I'm going to use are already hopefully sort of clear. So the argument, for the argument, consider this. So you have this higher level property M, and it is multiply realizable by a bunch of physical properties. Let's say that those properties are P1, P2, P3, and so on and so forth. Let's say that S is the set of all, that's important, all nomologically possible realizers of this higher level property M. It's just an assumption. So from realizer similarity, and that first step, we have this consequence that there is a causal power, let's call it C1, such that C1 is had by each property in S. And is that inference clear? Because you know, if the realizing similarity is true, then every property here must share some causal power. So now, from the nomic bearer's thesis, and the second step here, it follows that having any property from S nomologically necessitates having C1, because nomic bearer's thesis says that, well, a property has a causal power insofar as it is nomologically guaranteed that having that property implies having that causal power. Well, you know, having any property from S will nomologically necessitate having that causal power. Now, assume this. Also, I mean, this is actually a very plausible claim here. I call it supervenient. So, having a higher level property nomologically necessitates having some realizer of it. That is, you know, higher level properties in a very weak sense at least supervene on their realizers. I mean, that is a plausible idea, right? So you can't have a higher level property unless that you have some properties which bring about that property. Now, from 1 and 4, we have the consequence that having M, this higher level property, nomologically necessitates having some property from S. We just don't know which one, but that is the idea. And now, from 5 and 3, so 5 says having M nomologically necessitates having some property from S, and 3 says having any property from S nomologically necessitates having C1. It follows that having M nomologically necessitates having C1, which means that, you know, there is some causal power C1 such that having M nomologically necessitates C1. And if you remember the definition of an epiphenomenal property, then this higher level property M cannot be epiphenomenal, because there is, after all, some causal power, at least one causal power, such that having that higher level property nomologically requires having that causal power. So this is the conclusion of this main argument here. I mean, are the inferences clear? I mean, of course, there are lots of controversial ideas here we can talk about, but you know, the inferences between, okay. So the conclusion, of course, generalized from this particular example. It's not even an example, it's just like an arbitrarily selected sort of property here to all physically realized higher level properties. So the summary of the argument is basically this. So laws of nature impose causal power similarities on all nomologically possible realizers of a given higher level property, therefore also impose causal power similarities on all nomologically possible bearers of that higher level property, which means, according to my understanding of epiphenomenal properties, higher level properties, insofar as they are physically realized, are not epiphenomenal. Okay, so this is pretty much the conclusion of the argument. I have just a couple of things to say, if I have time. 3, 4 minutes. Okay. So there is a worry with this argument. Oh, no, there might be lots of worries, but you know, there is one that I am aware of anyway, that the conclusion overgeneralizes in this particular way. So the conclusion seems to generalize from physically realized higher level properties to all nomologically possible properties of concrete particulars. And the reason is this. So let's assume that all nomologically possible concrete particulars are somehow physical objects in a very sort of maybe broadly. You know, of course, I mean, it's really tricky to think about it, tricky to think about what it's for something to be physical, but let's assume, you know, there's no problem there. So the idea is that, well, let's assume that all nomologically possible property bearers are physical objects. Well, being a physical object will put some constraints on the causal powers of those objects. If, for example, all physical objects have mass, although they might not, I don't know, but let's say they do, then, you know, the causal powers of mass or having mass will figure in any causal profile of any property. So that is the sort of like overgeneralization worry there. In a way, given that anything that has mass is going to have the causal powers of mass, then given that anything that has any property will have mass, then anything will have any property, so it will have the causal powers of mass. That is the sort of idea, which is basically that you're making this notion of an epiphenomenal property like almost too, you know, too, again, maybe uninteresting, that is, you know, because the causal powers of mass or whatever other physical properties that you might want to sort of consider there, it's just going to figure in every possible, nomologically possible properties, causal profile. Well, I have two responses, and this is like one of the things where your help will be really helpful. It's just like, I'm not really sure if there's a tension between those two responses, but let's see. So one response is that, well, this is not a problem, because after all, we are trying to get rid of epiphenomenal properties in, you know, higher level, or in the case of higher level properties, and then we also show that, you know, the question wasn't really something to worry about anyway, so because there are no nomologically possible epiphenomenal properties. So that is like one way to maybe respond to the worry here. The other one is more interesting, and I hope, you know, at least that one is going to be sort of relatively persuasive. Is like the classical move, just make a distinction between two types of causal powers. First class causal powers and second class causal powers. And by definition, second class causal powers are had by any nomologically possible being. So basically that's how we define this notion of a second class causal power. Those are the powers that everything has. So they are called second class because they don't indicate any privileges anything has done. So that is why I'm calling them second class causal powers. And the suggestion here is that having only second class causal powers is not going to be sufficient to be a non-epiphenomenal property. So that is, if you have a property which has a causal profile that is exhausted by second class causal powers, then, you know, maybe that property is epiphenomenal. So a cost of this response is that maybe then properties that are had by all nomologically possible beings may turn out to be epiphenomenal. And that is why that's the reason why I said, you know, there might be sort of tension between those two responses here. So maybe properties like having mass, like highly determinable properties, may turn out to be epiphenomenal in that sense. Is this a cost? In a way it is, but there are some ways of dealing with that worry, and you might say, well, maybe properties like having mass can be epiphenomenal, but they are determinants, like having a particular mass will not be epiphenomenal, and that is how you justify the legitimacy of mass as a property. Benefit of this response is that we have a very clear, I think anyway, illustration of why properties, like widely disjuncted properties, like being red or being non-red, for example, think about that as a single property, a disjunctive property, are not legitimate. I mean, even if, you know, some people will say that they are not real properties, and some people will say, well, they are properties, but they are very sort of like, you know, they don't really deserve to be sort of even considered seriously. So I think this shows that if this response is right, then we have an explanation of why such properties are not legitimate. Because arguably, such properties will have only second class causal powers that are had by anything anyway. So the benefit of this response is that. Okay, just to conclude, so I discussed this question, so what is it for a property to have a causal power? And my answer was, a property is a causal power insofar as having that property nomologically requires having that causal power, and then we use that to get an account of epiphenomenal properties, which says that, well, a property F is epiphenomenal if and only if there is no causal power C, such that as a matter of nomological necessity, having that property F implies that you would have that causal power C. And then I gave a negative answer to this question too. So are higher, are physically realized higher level properties epiphenomenal? I said, if epiphenomenal properties are understood this way, and I think they should be, if the nomic baristas is true, then such properties are not going to be epiphenomenal, because laws of nature are going to impose causal resemblances on all possible realizers of those properties. And that is me. Thank you.